content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources. And today, I'm going to start with AARP, the magazine. And I'm going to start with an article about Michael J. Fox and an article right after that about Parkinson's disease. Unbreakable, after a tough, dark spell, Michael J. Fox has emerged steelier, more realistic, and ready to tackle whatever comes next. This article is by Andrew Corsello. The man zooming with me from his New York summer home on Long Island looks fit, sunned, and appealingly in need of a haircut. He wears a black Muhammad Ali t-shirt. The trembling is minimal. He is droll, irresistibly upbeat, and endlessly forthcoming. Parkinson's disease tend to tamp and subdue its victims to various degrees, and Michael J. Fox is no exception. Even so, the frisky aura that first endeared him to the world some 40 years ago is still readily apparent. The instant my mug appears on his computer screen, Fox offers, "Ah, bearded, sagacious, and avuncular," which, in addition to establishing that he's still got it, is the most delightful spin on heavy-set, balding guy I have ever encountered. When I ask a second later about how he's feeling, he quips, "Above average for a brain-damaged human." And we're off. He's always been a rapid speaker, his mind working faster than the speed of articulation. Parkinson's does its best to dam and blur his words, but Fox just bursts through, his thoughts erupting in batches, sometimes seemingly stuck together. I'm kind of a freak. It's weird that I've done as well as I have for as long as I have, he admits, before instructing me to disregard his appearance. People often think of Parkinson's as a visual thing, but the visuals of it are nothing. On any given day, my hands could be barely shaking, or they could be, he flails about to demonstrate. It's what you can't see, the lack of an inner gyroscope, of a sense of balance, of peripheral perception. I mean, I'm sailing a ship on stormy seas on the brightest of days. Any story about Fox is, in part, a story about underestimation, about how the guy has been defying expectations for more than 30 years. And yet, I admit to him now, I walked out of his office after our 2017 interview and thought, I'm so glad I got the chance to meet him while I still could. Fox laughs at this. Yeah. The doctor who diagnosed me in 1991 told me I had 10 years left of work. His stamina is phenomenal, says Fox's longtime producer, Nellie Fortenberry, who has worked with him on his four memoirs. Even though Parkinson's is progressive and diminishes what you're physically able to do, he's found ways to shift the focus to what he has rather than what he doesn't have. Fox's wife, Tracy Paulin, whom he met on the set of Family Ties, married in 1988 and with whom he has four children, speaks of her husband's can-do attitude as if it were a weapon. I sometimes underestimate the power of his optimism, she says, but time and again I've seen him use it to blast his way back. He's done a lot of blasting since AARP last checked in with him. In 2018, surgeons partially removed a benign tumor that had coiled around his spinal cord. 4 months later, while relearning how to walk from scratch, like a cliche from a movie, he fell at home. Doctors stabilized his shattered left arm with a metal plate and 19 screws. It was a literal and figurative breaking point. As he lay in agony on the kitchen floor waiting for the ambulance, Fox says he had a persistent and angry thought. How full of sh am I? And a difficult question. Had he been kidding himself and others about his surgical recovery and maybe more? As he dropped into what he says was a prolonged dark patch, Fox began questioning everything, even his own optimism. Is it still possible for me to be optimistic and realistic at the same time, he asked himself. In other words, had the price of keeping up a good face, of striving to remain the playful, glass-half-full guy audiences had always loved, of being Michael J. Fox, had it become too steep? To top things off, the increasing unreliability of his speech forced Fox, who turned 60 in June, to end his acting career last year. Fox has rolled with the punches, dusted himself off, and moved forward. So, is he the same man I met in 2017? At his core, absolutely. Funny, friendly, sharp. Yet he is also perceptibly steelier, more precise, acutely aware of time, and interested above all else in clarity, in seeing and accepting things for what they are. As I wrote my latest book, I'm now out of the lemonade business, he said. I'm really blunt with people about cures. When they ask me if I will be relieved of Parkinson's in my lifetime, I say, I'm 60 years old and science is hard, so no. He is, in short, a person who knows his path and purpose. Fitting for a man who, along with gracing this magazine's cover for the fourth time, I don't feel like a guest of AARP anymore, he says laughing, but a resident. He is receiving an honorary 2022 AARP Purpose Prize for the pioneering work he and his namesake foundation have done for Parkinson's research. Now, in another frank, wide-ranging interview with AARP, Fox updates us on what he's been up to and what's next. Do you still consider yourself a lucky man? Absolutely. I began with the tough working-class family I was born into. My mom was a payroll clerk, my dad was in the Army for 25 years, and then a police dispatcher. And they had this freak son who did all this acting and music, and they didn't know where I came from, but they figured out how to help me. I told my father I was moving to Hollywood when I dropped out of high school, and he drove me down, because I was making a living. And my mother, at 92, is still great, full of advice. Then I met the woman I married and had the children. I had and lived the life I live. Still, it's hard to explain to people how lucky I am because I also have Parkinson's. Some days are a struggle. Some days are more difficult than others. But the disease is this thing that's attached to my life. It isn't the driver. And because I have assets, I have access to things others don't. I wouldn't begin to compare my experience to that of a working guy who gets Parkinson's and has to quit his job and find a new way to live. So I'm really lucky. How did you pull out that dark place you were in? For one thing, I am genuinely a happy guy. I don't have a morbid thought in my head. I don't fear death at all. But as I came through that darkness, I also had an insight about my father-in-law, who had passed away and always espoused gratitude and acceptance and confidence. And I started to notice things I was grateful for and the way other people would respond to difficulty with gratitude. I concluded that gratitude makes optimism sustainable. And if you don't think you have anything to be grateful for, keep looking. Because you don't just receive optimism. You can't wait for things to be great and then be grateful for that. You've got to behave in a way that promotes that. What else has helped you get your groove back? Back to the Future. It's amazing. More people of all ages approach me now about that movie than ever before. I'm not sure I understand why. Then I came across it on TV last Christmas, and I thought I was really good in it. Better than I thought I'd been. More important, I got the spirit of the movie. I understood it was just a big giggle, and that we all need. And I mean the readership of this magazine, too. To take credit for what we've done and the lives we've touched, and to occasionally step back a bit and appreciate that much of life has been great, and that there's a lot more to live. Muhammad Ali helped me, too. I used to avoid watching myself on the TV shows I did. when I was much younger, because I was healthier then and showed no signs of Parkinson's. But I wondered about Ali, whom I had become friendly with. He had been such a beautiful athlete before Parkinson's. So after he died, I asked his wife, Lonnie, if he ever watched recordings of his fights. He watched for hours, she said. He loved it. And I thought, yeah, I should love it too. It's a legacy, some graffiti that leaves a message of positivity. You quit acting. Why? Any regrets? I continued to act for almost 30 years after I was diagnosed. After Spin City, I took a break, then did a couple of episodes of Scrubs, and it was fun. I played a guy with OCD, and I realized I could put some of the Parkinson's into that role. I guest starred as a cancer patient on Boston Legal, and that went well. Then I had a great stroke of luck when The Good Wife came to me with the character of Lewis Canning, a lawyer who uses his Parkinson's-like symptoms to manipulate juries. He was so crass. I loved the idea that disabled people can be blank holes, too. When I couldn't act the way I used to act, I found new ways to act. By then, I reached the point where I couldn't rely on my ability to speak on any given day, which meant I couldn't act comfortably at all anymore. So, last year, I gave it up. I have only a few regrets about roles I was approached about but didn't pursue. One is Ghost. Now, I can't imagine anyone other than Patrick Swayze doing it. If I could go back and put all I've learned from Parkinson's into a role, I would do Casualties of War again, with a better understanding of the cruelty and suffering and beauty and sublime qualities of all that Ms. Higos and I was trying to negotiate while not getting beat up by Sean Penn. Your Parkinson's Foundation has had a great success so far. How did that come about, and what is your role? It's been amazing. And that's because we blew up the usual way you do things. After finishing Spin City in 2000, I squatted in my office on that stage set and refused to leave until I had built the early stages of the foundation. My co-founder, Deborah Books, and I didn't want to create an endowment to spend on advertising and stuff. We wanted to get the money to science to find a cure. No agenda other than that. So we created what has become this giant network of patients, scientists, and institutions. We've put more than $1 billion into it, and patients are the key. Now they guide our agenda and have been critical, for example, to our promising work in trying to find biomarkers for Parkinson's, which would allow us to identify the disease in people before symptoms are evident, and to treat it proactively and get rid of it. And we've got a lot of treatments that have gone through the FDA, and we've developed a great relationship with pharma researchers on Parkinson's drug development. There are now better drugs and more effective treatments for a lot of the side effects and other aspects of the condition. And we helped make that happen. Now we're moving on to the next article, New Hope for Parkinson's. The Michael J. Fox Foundation and other organizations have made real progress. Here are some recent highlights. Parkinson's disease affects about 1 million Americans, with 60,000 new cases each year. And in the 3 decades since Michael J. Fox's diagnosis, PD has been the fastest-growing brain disease. Only Alzheimer's disease affects more people. Doctors prescribe PD as a neurodegenerative disorder. Essentially, the brain cells are dying, explains Michael Oakham, MD, National Medical Advisor for the Parkinson's Foundation and the Chair of Neurology at University of Florida Health. Other times, neurons in the brain that control movement and mood degenerate. That's why both physical disability and depression are hallmarks of the disease. The cases of Parkinson's are still a mystery. Oakham says about 15% of people may have a genetic mutation that puts them at risk. Head injuries or exposure to certain environmental toxins may play a role too. The earliest signs of PD can include a decreased sense of smell, recurring constipation, and sleep problems. As the brain neurons degenerate, patients may develop gait and balance issues. About 70 to 80% also develop tremors. Psychological symptoms include anxiety, cognitive changes such as memory and attention deficits, and impulse control, and sleep disorders. Although Parkinson's is not considered a fatal disease, it can raise one's risk for life-threatening issues such as falls and fractures, as well as pneumonia. PD patients are at risk for aspirating food, meaning it goes down the wrong pipe, and can lead to an infection in the lungs. For the bulk of our lifetimes, little progress was made in understanding and treating PD, but that's changed in recent years thanks to an explosion of research funding. The Michael J. Fox Foundation has contributed more than $1 billion since its founding in 2000. The National Institutes of Health, NIH, spent $242 million on PD in 2020 alone. We have turned a corner, noted Hayden Piyami, a professor of neurology and genetics at the University of Alabama at the Birmingham School of Medicine. Read on to find out about some of the latest breakthroughs. So here we go. High-intensity cardio. In 2018, a clinical trial showed that high-intensity treadmill workouts three times a week meaningfully slowed the progression of Parkinson's over the course of 6 months. Now, high-intensity exercise is recommended for patients alongside strength training and posture and balance exercises. When you have the disease, you move more slowly and you have tremor. You are rigid. You have abdominal postural reflexes. Exercise helps all of those, says Daniel Korkos, a Northwestern University professor and a researcher with the trial. Researchers are seeking PD patients to participate in a follow-up trial to discover what level of intensity is the most effective. You can learn more about that at sparx3pd.com. Personalized genetic medicine. Research has boomed over the past decade as technology breakthroughs have made genetic data generation and analysis much easier. My PhD thesis took me 3 years to complete. You could probably do all that research in an afternoon now, points out Andrew Singleton, an NIH neurogeneticist and the recipient of the Fox Foundation's 2019 Robert A. Pritzker Prize. Dozens of genetic misfires are now suspected of being involved in the development of Parkinson's. You can find trials for drugs that target genes at clinicaltrials.gov or through the Fox Foundation's Fox Trial Finder. The gut microbiome. Recent studies have found a possible link between Parkinson's and an imbalance of bacteria in the digestive tract. Specifically, Piyami's lab has discovered that two common ingredients in over-the-counter probiotics are overrepresented in the guts of people who have PD. I worry about people with PD who are self-medicating with probiotics, she says. Studies have also found that a nasty bacterium called H. pylori can interfere with absorption of the primary Parkinson's drug, levodopa. Testing for H. pylori can often be done in a doctor's office. Biomarker detection. An enormous observational study, the Parkinson's Progression Markers Initiative, PPMI, is trying to nail down early signs of the disease by monitoring symptoms that sometimes precede PD, such as loss of sense or smell. The study aims to enroll up to 4,000 people in person internationally, plus up to 500,000 more online, to identify markers that can lead to the development of new treatments. Smart deep brain stimulators. Actually, I know someone that has this. Surgically implanted deep brain stimulators use electrical impulses to improve symptoms such as tremor and rigidity. But these stimulators cannot be directly monitored, so results are measured by the subjective reports of patients. In 2020, the Food and Drug Administration approved Medtronic's new stimulator with BrainSense technology, which can sense and record the brain's electrical signals. Its ADAPT-PD trial is now testing whether the BrainSense recordings can be used to adjust stimulation automatically. And now I'm going to cover the last three questions that they had asked Michael Fox in his interview. What's new for you in terms of coping with Parkinson's? I have seeded a lot of things over. If I feel it all rushed and I have to do something multiple times, it's just not going to serve me. When I was putting on my shoes the other day, Tracy said, "You want some help with that?" I said, "Well, it will take me a couple of minutes to put my shoes on. If you do it, it'll take a minute. So you weigh it up." Among the things that bother me the most right now is how hard it is to communicate quickly through electronic means. Voice-enabled technology just isn't good enough. You say, "I'm catching a lot of blank for that," and wind up with, "I'm flying on a ship tomorrow." It's so frustrating. What's your advice for those with living with Parkinson's? Have an active life and do not let yourself get isolated and marginalized. You can live with it. People sometimes say that a relative or a parent or a friend died of Parkinson's. You don't die of Parkinson's. You die with Parkinson's. Because once you have it for life. Until we can remedy that, and we're working hard at it. So, to live with it, you need to exercise and be in shape and to eat well. If you can't drive, find a way to get around. Maintain friendships. Don't say, "Oh, I don't have anything to say to Bob." Bob might have something to say to you. Just make the call. And finally, I suspect I'm premature in asking this, but what do you want your legacy to be? I hope my children are a positive influence in the world. I hope people will enjoy my work as an actor. At a deeper level, I hope people see sincerity in the things I've said and done. If I've positively helped anybody with Parkinson's, that's great too. I appreciate the purpose and the opportunity to help the foundation, to be part of something that's potentially so powerful and life-changing and world-changing. That's huge. Beside that, this is a kind of a vanity thing. A lot of really great guitarists have come up to me over the years and said they picked up the guitar because of the Johnny B. Goode scene in Back to the Future. If I did anything in this life, I got John Mayer to pick up the guitar. And as your reader, I'm going to recommend another Parkinson's organization, Dance for PD. They offer a lot of different styles of dance and movement for people with Parkinson's. Just look them up. They're in Brooklyn, New York, Dance for PD. Now, staying with AARP, the magazine, let's look at a money saver article. His, Hers, and Theirs. Real estate is a concern for a couple getting married later in life. The problem? Where should we live? That has stumped Californians Pamela Parkinson, 69, and Tom Yosa, 67, as they prepare to wed. She, a divorced psychologist, and he, a widowed physician, now retired, both own houses that are the lion's share of their respective wealth. As is, however, neither house feels right for living together. Their other concerns: if one of them dies, they want to guarantee that the other can remain where they'll be living. Selling either residence could result in a huge tax bill on the capital gains, and Tom has two adult children he wants to provide for after his death. "We want to be sure that we don't do anything stupid," Pamela wrote. The advice: some financial matters can be handled by a single practitioner. This one required a kitchen sink of expertise. I turned to Rapid City, South Dakota, financial planner and therapist Rick Coller, Irvine, California, based estate planner Scott Harshman, and Long Beach, California accountant Donita Joseph. From their ideas, a plan emerged. 1. Weigh wishes before taxes. If there weren't a tax issue, what would you really want to do? Harshman asks. Don't do something just for tax reasons. That's good advice in almost any situation. Don't lose sight of your number one goal, he notes. Pamela said they would either jointly buy a place in their neighborhood or renovate Tom's home. Her house felt too small for them to share, and if they sold a home, it would be hers. If that's the case, go house shopping. The couple toured the few homes for sale in their town, but found them wanting. So I asked how they would renovate Tom's house to make it work for them. On their wish list, office space for each and a music room. We don't want to downsize, Tom said. We want something that we both feel really good about. 3. Run the numbers. Pamela and Tom estimated those renovations would cost more than $300,000. The experts say the money could come from the equity in their homes. But how? Pamela would owe substantial taxes if she sold her house, which she bought nearly 30 years ago. That's the case, even though $250,000 of her profits would be excluded from taxes. Instead of selling the home, the experts suggest she raise the money by either refinancing the mortgage or taking out a home equity line of credit, then renting out the property. Make it legit. Pamela and Tom have suspected they would need a prenuptial agreement, and they do. For that, they each would hire a matrimonial lawyer. They also have to consult a trust and estate attorneys to ensure that Pamela won't be forced to move if Tom dies first and that she or her estate is reimbursed for the money she'll be putting into Tom's house. Both Pamela and Tom already have living trusts, legal holding pens of sorts for assets, which allow for each easy distribution after death. Tom's trust, which holds his house, can be instructed to pass it to his heirs only after Pamela dies or moves. Pamela's renovation money can be treated as a loan from her trust to his, a loan that will have to be repaid. Estate planning and a prenup. That's what it comes down to, Harshman says. The outcome? Pamela and Tom are mulling over the plan. They're meeting with real estate agents to figure out the rent she could charge for her house. And they've started talking to contractors about doing the work on his. They're looking forward to being together in the same home, not too far in the future. Merging money and real estate later in life can be complicated, but it's certainly worth it. Now, we have just a few minutes left, so let's look at some great ways to save. There's 99 of these, so we can look at them from time to time. Food. Buy reusable Keurig cups. Single-cup coffee makers are the hassle-free way to brew coffee. But Caribou K-Cups, for example, cost 66 cents each as opposed to 28 cents per cup if you use Caribou ground coffee. The answer? Buy $1.50 reusable K-Cups, add your own ground beans, and save roughly $277 in a year on a two-cup-a-day habit. Well, folks, we have run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. Again, 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.